One second.
Where do I put this? This is... Does anyone like this? Just clip it on? No, here, put it on. See that I don't turn it off. Okay, and it's on, it's recording?
Yep.
Okay, so we'll begin in 1 minute by the clock. It's Kanayin Hara, the news, you know, everyone's hearing the news from Israel. They imagine we're living here in fright and fear and life is not normal. And Baruch Hashem, outside of the politicians, I guess, and the generals in the army, no one else is worrying about Iran right now. Thank God.
Is Rabbi Rubin attending this year?
He should be, yeah. I spoke with him once since I got back. I wanted him to invite a well-known prisoner of Zion who I think is searching. We'll see if he followed through, because if he comes, Rabbi Rubin has to work with him. You should have mentioned Mashiach, Nathaniel. They just asked me 1 second ago, is Rabbi Rubin coming this year? 1 second ago. Ah.
Hello.
How are things?
Welcome back.
Thank you. A week ago Thursday. We're back already. The jet lag is behind us, I hope. We'll see soon enough. Do you want paper? I can give you paper. Where do I have paper? Okay. I have paper in the office, endless paper. Ah, Ephraim in a new status. Father, big, that's a big jump, a big jump. Okay, today is September 2nd, 2012. And in a moment, I will be privileged, Be'ezrat Hashem, to begin my 54th year of teaching Torah. At my age already, and with all that I saw in my travels this summer, ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu that we're healthy and able physically and mentally. You hear it, Tzom ufenecha Adonai Elohai, shelo ye'erat devat hakalal yadi, velo ekashel bedva halacha, V'yismechu bi chaveray, v'lo amal ha-tamei tahar, v'lo al ha-tahar tamei, v'lo yikashlu chaveray, b'dva halacha, v'yismach bahem. Ki Adonai yitain chachma mipib dat utfuna, gal einai v'abita nifla'ot metodatecha. And as you know, that's the tefillah we make before we start learning, before we start teaching, and Ribbono Shel Olam should give us all health and strength. I also want to dedicate today's shiur. It's very moving for me because in my life I only walked my own children to chuppah and then turned around with Masada Kedushin. And there's only one other couple that I walked the chatan to chuppah, my Talmud, Jean-Jacques Zemelman, and his marriage to Esther Holzer. And I turned around with Masada Kedushin, and unfortunately this summer Esther died, and I wanted to dedicate the shiur in her memory. They didn't even hit 20 years of marriage, and those of you that will be medical doctors, halavai, you'll continue the research that will ultimately break the hold that cancer has upon us. Okay, a little bit background to the shiur, what we're thinking about, what we want to do. First of all, my name is Aaron Rakefet, and the story of how this shiur begins, I've told in Washington in my seventh book, perhaps my most important volume, because scholarship comes today, comes tomorrow, it's going to be done one day, but a scholarly memoir of a period is important. It's important for future generations to understand how we grew up and how we developed and what the challenges were. And mi v'mi ha-holchim. Anyway, in the early 70s, 71 to be exact, I record the conversation. Rabbi Koopman said to me, you have smicha, you're a Rosh Yeshiva, and you have a doctorate in Jewish history. Do something exciting that will be unique for Michlala. And he wanted to hear what I had to say about responsa literature. The truth is that growing up in New York and Reb Moshe Feinstein, I still remember when the first volume of the Igrot Moshe came out, An Orach Chaim, it may be, you can check it out, about 57, if my memory is correct, I may be off a year or so. So I remember we were literally dancing. Why were we dancing? Because until then, all of Reb Moshe's tshuvot spread ba'al peh. Reb Moshe Paskin this, Reb Moshe Paskin that, and suddenly we had Reb Moshe in print, in our hands, right before our eyes. So at an early age, I got involved in response literature, V'yet Chata'aya Nimaskir Hayom. I remember starting up with the Rav, telling the Rav Reb Moshe's tshuva against the liquid soap on Shabbos. And we asked Rebbe, how does he react to his cousin's psak? And the Rav was very adamantly against Reb Moshe on that psak, and some of the other psakim as well. In the tshuva that Reb Moshe has to me in the first volume on Yoredeya, I originally asked that shaila of the Rav. Again, if I go into details, it'll take too long, but you can look it up. I originally asked that shaila of the Rav, and the Rav went back and forth and said he doesn't know what the pasken. He sees it this way, he sees it that way. So I wrote the shaila to Reb Moshe, and I got the answer. So I showed the Rav, it's before the Sefer came out, I showed the Rav the written tshuva of Reb Moshe, and I can still see Rebbe looking at it. But I could see he was not happy with Reb Moshe's answer. He still remained I can see it either way. And he found it hard to reach a conclusion. So at an early age, I already learned there's a world of response literature out there. It's a fascinating world. And then when I was studying with the Rav and I needed a topic for an MA, whatever the reasons are, I have two masters, it's all due to naivete, because the yeshiva required an MHL, and I was interested in an MA in Jewish history. So I got both of them. Had I had Nisaichel, I would have gone and said, look, I'm going to get an MA in Jewish history, exempt me from the Master of Hebrew Literature. They would have exempted me, but I did both of them. So we were learning Yoredeya with the Rav, and we were discussing Simon Bet with Shchita, dealing with the Shoteh, and what about a schizophrenic? And the Rav went into a whole description of the famous Machleket in 1766 over the Cleves divorce with the schizophrenic. Is he normal? Isn't he normal? And I did my master's. I actually did my master's on that topic. And it introduced me to a world of responsa literature. And when I started teaching Michalar and I began in the Israeli division and the postgraduate division, I got involved and I developed it further. Then when the Kollel began and the boys wanted me to teach in the Kollel, I said, you know, what can I teach? I can't, Reb Aaron is giving a shir in Gemara. And I don't know, at that time they had Reb Zalman Nechemya Goldberg was teaching Yoredeya. And I said, all right, let me do something a little different and open up a world that, generally speaking, you're not exposed to in the yeshiva world. And subsequently, many decades have gone by, and hundreds, if not more, shayurim, as you know, on response to literature and its implications, and halakha, and paskening, and trying to take all our learning to a higher level, to be able to feel the trees and not just see a forest before us. Now, these past years, we spent, I don't recall, perhaps 5 years on response to literature out of the Holocaust. And then we went in, we spent a year on a literary forgery, the Besamim Rosh. I still get correspondence from people all over the world who are listening to those shirim on the Besamim Rosh. And I say to you again, if anyone is looking for a doctoral thesis, all you have to do is take my shayurim and dot the I's and cross the T's and just fill in. I would tell you what has to be filled in, but we did a lot of work on the Besamim Rosh, understanding a literary forgery first rate, and how Gedolei Yisrael still quote him today seriously as if this is the Tshuva Tarush discovered the many years afterwards. But be it as it may, then we went in, we spent a good part of last year on interethnic marriages. I don't know how many we have in the Kollel this year, but 2 years ago we had 5 interethnic marriages in the Kollel. And Sfadim married to Ashkenaziyat. And we spent a good part of last year on the halakhic implications of interethnic marriages, ending off, and I mentioned Moshe Chaim Kasola, who was in the shir a number of years, and he showed me Tshuvat, and Rav Avadjah and Chelek Tet, the new Chelek of Abiyabia Ome, and Rav Avadjah's sons, that those of you who are coming at Aliyah, if the day you get off the plane, in my case, the day I got off the boat, you say, I'm coming in Aliyah, I now want to become a true Israeli, and since Eretz Yisrael, the posek here is Maran HaBeit Yosef, instantaneously you can become a Sfadi with all the Chumrat and all the Kulat involved. In other words, become a Sfadi means you can eat rice on Pesach. It also means you have to eat Kvat Kosher, the feed of Beis Yosef. So there's Chumrah and Kula in Eretz Yisrael and America today. The Kulat outweigh the Chumrat, because basically all meat today is Kvat Kosher because of the Hungarians, not because of the Sfadim. But once the Hungarians conquered the world, we all suffer as a result, and we have to dance to the Hungarian tune. So once it's glad already, you make it glad for the Sfadim, but then you have the advantage on Pesach. You don't have to look at kidney yet. You can eat kidney yet. You're a king, or as Yosef Chaim said, he would walk through the supermarket in Israel and taking the kidney up, waving it in the air, everyone should see, and throwing it into his shopping wagon. So it was a very fascinating topic. Then I began a topic which is going to take us a few years. The klalim of psak halacha. How do we paskin? How do we approach? Some of us should go on to become Gedolei Yisrael and poskim b'pakim. What is behind psak? I mean, when you graduate the yeshiva, how much do you know? In my days, before our change, literally a year or two before I got smicha. But there used to be an oral smicha b'china. So what did you go in on? You went in your adeya, a few simanim, what you learned, and 100 daf gemara. No, when you grow older, you understand that Shas has thousands of pages. And Psak Halacha, you have Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch, and it's a lot more to your idea than just the bus of a Cholov and Tarovet. And how do you paskin? So if you recall last year, we spoke about where the sources are, and then we went in at the end of the year, we spent a lot of time, which is more important, a Shelet and Tshuva Sefer or a Psak Sefer? When they contradict, when it's two Mechabrim who don't contradict, which is more important? And here, if you recall all the sources, it's an open issue. Because when someone is writing a Sefer for the sake of argument, Shir Meshmirat Shabbat Kehilchata, you're sitting B'Menuchat HaNefesh, no one is bothering you, you're secluded from the world, you're looking at all the Svarim, you're thinking, you're reaching conclusions, and you're turning out a Sefer Psak. On the other hand, it's not Lahalacha, there's no Siyata Lishmaya. If you remember the Tshuva of the Meshiv Dava, of the Netziva, he went into great detail. When you're writing a Tshuva, you're writing Halacha L'maisa. You have to give a definitive answer. You can't just quote Shitat and write long footnotes. You have to tell the lady or the man what they can do and what they can't do. And Yaakov, when you're writing a tshuva l'halacha l'maisa, there always is a lot of pressure. And they're waiting for an answer. So there's a pro and a con. And we saw all the sources. And ultimately, I ended off the final shiur was when a tshuva and a sefer of halacha blend into one. And I gave you two examples from the Shulchan Aruch. the most famous example, and I met the son of Rabbi Ziv in Teaneck, who edited his father's Zecher Tzadik Livracha, edited the Tshuvat HaRamah, and I told him how he spoke about your father, I spoke about your father's work, and he says, which tshuva did you quote? And I said the most important one. I didn't have to tell him the number, all I had to say, Shamati kol acharai, I heard a voice murmuring after me that Moshe did a terrible thing. It was the Ramah, and all of you know that the Ramah was Masada Kedushin. If Shabbat began at 6 o'clock in the afternoon, he was Masada Kedushin. No, what do you say, Danny? 10 o'clock at night. And that tshuva, which is so fascinating, Kuf Chaf Hei and Tshuva Taramah, winds up in the Shulchan Aruch word by word, Shin Lamed Tet, and it literally becomes, you see, the tshuva and the psak sefer blend into one. Another example I gave you, which is Halacha L'maisa in the State of Israel, after not being Halacha L'maisa for so many hundreds of years, Ashreinu Shezachinu, that it's Halacha L'maisa, is are you allowed to bring a knife into the shul, into the Beis Medrash. Here you're coming to Davin, you're traveling a highwayman, it's a Maram Mirottenberg, I showed you the source, and you're bringing a knife in. Davening is laharich yamav shel adam, a knife is lekatzer yamav, right or wrong, Yaakov, to stab him. Nowadays, I don't have to tell you, every young man walks around with a gun. When you get your gun in the army, they give you the gun and the Tanakh at the same time. I have a fallout ceremony this Thursday at the Kotel for my 10th grandson, Kravi, in Tzva Haganah LeYisrael. So he's following the footsteps of his grandfather, who was the first Rothkopf to serve in an army since Churban Bayit. And no, what do? You get that gun. You can't leave it out of your sight. What do? You walk into a shul to daven. And of course, this is the halacha. Obviously, if it's batash shoteif, you don't let the gun out of your hand. But if you can put the gun down, you cover it up. The minute here is they put it under the bench. If you want, soldiers will put the gun under the bench while they daven. Now, I want to move forward. And I want to move into an area which is, from the point of view of some of the other topics we're going to reach out to, it's not a major topic, but it's a very important topic because this is widely quoted today. We're living in a world where I don't have to tell you we face challenges, halachic challenges, and everyone talks about minhag, and everyone quotes minhag mevatel halacha, minhag establishes halacha. And let's see the sources and let's see if we can reach some sort of conclusion how minhag affects halacha l'maisa. Now, I want to begin, and I first of all I have to tell you a minhag is very, very important. We already have sources, very fascinating sources. Interestingly, the main sources in relation to minhag are in the Yerushalmi, not in the Bavli. In the Bavli, we just touch upon minhag kliyachi yad, but the main sources we find in the Yerushalmi. And I want to quote the Yerushalmi in Psachim, Perik Revi, Halacha Gimel. Now, again, the subdivisions of the Yerushalmi are very arbitrary, and the fact that we call it Halacha Gimel can be very misleading, but it means it's the third Mishnah, the third division. And again, when you quote Yerushalmi, you have another problem. What Yerushalmi are you quoting? It's not like the Bavli that the pagination remains constant. As a matter of fact, when the Haredi world, and not the whole Haredi world, that's for Chalila, but the Litvisha world went out against Rav Steinsaltz. So one of their complaints was that he didn't follow the pagination of the Vilna Shas. Now, I don't understand that complaint because he did follow it. He just divided the pages in half, but everything equals the Vilna Shas. But in the new Shas that they came out with, both they have a Hebrew version and now the English version, everyone tells me, oh, this is wonderful. The Steinsaltz new Shas follows the Vilna Daf 100%. Okay, in the Bavli, if you're going to upset the pagination, you're going to be declared an isfaf, a bum, a pushtak, whatever word you know that is negative, a payer, whatever language you speak. But when it comes to Yerushalmi, we have so many different editions that it's so hard to quote. But I'm quoting Perek Revi'im Psachim, Halacha Gimel. It's the Perek that deals Makom Shenahagu, deals with Minhag, whether you travel, Erev Shabbos, whether you don't travel. And here, very interesting Halacha. What is it talking about? You all know that on Shabbat, our animals have to rest as well. And therefore, there's a big problem if you have a big animal, you have a behema gasa, and you rent out the behema gasa to a non-Jew, he will use the animal on Shabbos. And technically, the animal belongs to you. And the animal, you are chayav in shvitat ha-behema. You can't have an animal that you own working for you on Shabbos. So the halacha was that you cannot sell a behema gasa to a Gentile. Why can't you sell a behema gasa to a Gentile? Because that Gentile may also rent animals from you. And once he rents or borrows, you'll say, well, if I could sell it to him, I can let him borrow it, I can lend it to him, I can rent it to him, and it'll work with the animal on Shabbos. Technically speaking, if you sell it to him, what's wrong? It's his animal. There's no halacha that every animal in the world has to rest on Shabbos. Okay, we agree. Then if the animal doesn't belong to you and a guy buys a herd of oxen from you, the guy can do what he wants on Shabbos. If the guy buys a place, a whole group of horses from you, he can do what he wants. But Chazal made a gezeira that you cannot sell a behema gasa to a guy for fear that if you sell, he will rent, you will lend him, you will think, gee, I can do whatever I want with the guy. And if that's the case, he'll use the animal on Shabbos, and that is asur, because you still own it. No, if you rent or lend it to him, you still own it. And that's the gezeira, that you can't sell to him, because once you can sell, the Jew will think, well, if I can sell to him, I can rent to him, I can lend it to him, I can make skirut, I can do sheila, I can do whatever I want. And they made a gezeira, you cannot sell a behema gasa, a guy can't go near your animals. Fine. What about a behema daka? No one uses sheep, no one uses goats. They don't work for a person. I never yet saw someone riding on a goat or riding on a sheep. But these animals graze, and you have used them later for wool, for whatever we can get from them. We use it for meat, but there's no problem with Shabbos. If this is the case, it turned out that there were two minhagim. Some people said that you can sell to a guy. There's nothing to worry about. A guy is not going to work with the behema daka on Shabbos. It's not like a behema gasa. And some people said, no, once you start selling to a guy, even if it's a behema daka, you will sell a gasa, you will not differentiate, you will not draw a clear line, you will not understand the difference. There is a minhag not to sell at all. And this is the Mishnah. Makom shenagu limkar behema daka lagoyim mochrim. Makom shenagu shelo limkar ein mochrim. Fine. Two different rulings. Two different minhagim. Two different opinions. go a little further in the Gemara, and the Gemara says, wait a minute, what happens if he went and sold a Behema Daka in an area where you don't sell? Do you punish him? Do you fine him? Do you put a knas on him? And here's the famous words of the Gemara, Kishem shekonsim lahalacha, kach konsim leminhag. Very famous words of the Gemara, that a minhag is as important as a halacha. And if you have a community, let's say a chumrin b'nei Brak, a chumrin in Muncie, a chumrin Borough Park, that you're not allowed to sell a behema daka to a guy, and if you sell a behema daka, it's as if you sold the behema gasa. And if you sell any of these animals, the Beis Din fines you $100. Just as you have a knas for a halacha, you have a knas for a minhag. Very fascinating. A minhag is powerful. A minhag is binding. A minhag has authority. That's one tremendous source. I'll give you another. These are two major sources for the power of a minhag. You're going to find this one very fascinating. And this one also is hard to come by. It's not in the Bavli. It's not in Yerushalmi. It's in Masechet Sofrim. Now, Masechet Sofrim is, you all know, it's generally published in a Shas Gemara after Avodah Zarah. They're what we call Masechtat Ketanot. They don't have the authority of the Gemara, but they evidently were compiled before the Gaonic period. We do not yet have a single definitive work on Masechtat Sofrim, like we have, for instance, on the Tosefta, where you have Rav Tzuka Mandel's edition of the Tosefta. That's the edition that Rav Shaul Lieberman worked on. Rav Shaul Lieberman, Tosefta Kepshuto, never finished his task, but he took the Tzuka Mandel edition. On the Masechtat Ketanot, there was work done by Professor Michael Higer, who taught at the seminary too. See, you have to understand, the seminary 100 years ago, 90 years ago, 80 years ago, was very different than JTS of today. The seminary 100 years ago, 90 years ago, was still in theory an Orthodox institution. It proved to be a home for people who were totally observant, who were involved in scientific Jewish scholarship, in Chochmat Yisrael. And there are many names, Jacob Chaimson, I mean, he was Rav of Orech Chaim, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, these were totally Shomer Torah mitzvot. Michael Higer is another example. Louis Ginsberg was a gaon adir and ilui from Europe that Rav Moshe Soloveitchik yet stood in awe of, and we have correspondence. He already went off the path to a certain degree, although later on in life he regretted some of his stance on biblical criticism. Louis Finkelstein, who wasn't on the level of the others, he was already an American product, was totally observant in his own personal life. His father was a Rav in Brooklyn, was a Yudapeyesha Rav. I mean, these were very fascinating people who believed that the future was with JTS, that at the worst you had to make a small, what they viewed as a small compromise, bring a little English into the davening. The Mechitza problem, of course, becomes tremendous after World War II, but there were a lot of firm people there. It's hard for us to understand this today when JTS and Reform Judaism are one and the same. And of course, without going into great detail, Rav Shaul Lieberman, no one ever accused him of being a conservative Jew. He was the Chazon Ish's first cousin, and the Chazon Ish referred to him as the biggest bucky in the world. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein was overwhelmed when he met Rav Shaul Lieberman. The man knew Kol HaTorah Kula, as Rav Aaron described it, Munach B'Kufsa B'Fanav. It was like, it was all in front of him, that he had just finished learning at this moment. It was an unbelievable mind. All right, it's a shame that he wound up there, and we can be critical of his decision to teach at JTS, although I personally hold back. I don't want to be critical because I know his life story, I know his poverty, I know his first wife died, rumor has it, he did not have the money. She was the Minska Gadol's granddaughter. He was married to a granddaughter of a Gadol Sheba Gadolim, the Minska Rav, and she died in Israel. They say there was the Palestine, there was no money to go to a doctor. God have mercy. Okay, but anyway, Higger, there is a Higger edition, and there is an English edition of the Masechtot Ketanot that Sansino put out. For whatever the reasons are, it's not well known, but there is a Sansino edition of the Masechtot Sofrim, of the Masechtot Ketanot, as we call them. Now, what makes these Masechtot so hard to study, and this is something you have to bear in mind, a Gemara that everyone studied, you worked it out. You look at the Gemara, you'll take a Bava Metzi, you'll take a Bava Mekama, you'll take a Bava Batra, you'll take a Kedushin, you'll take a Gittin, the text is worked out. Even if the Haggad on the text, you can go to the Haggad and you have a smooth flowing text. The Gemaras, which were not studied that much, you know there's a lot of difficulty. The text does not read as smoothly. Halachat kama v'kama, the Masechtot Ketanot do not read as smoothly. Now, I'm quoting from Masechet Sofrim, Perek Yud Dalad, subdivision. Again, you do not find subdivisions all over, but this is from the Vilna Shas, where they put in subdivisions. I'm quoting Halacha Yud Chet. And here we come to a very fascinating topic. We read the five Megillot during the year. Right or wrong? Tisha B'Av, we read Eicha. Shavuot, what do we read? Rut. Pesach, Shir HaShirim. Sukkot, Kohelet. What are we missing? And Megillat Esther, we read on Purim. Right? These are the Megillot. Each one is read a certain time. Tell me, when do we read them? So it's very interesting. You look at me and say, what's the big deal? Eicha, we read at night. Right or wrong? Kohelet, Shiashirim, Rut, we read by day. When do we read it? When do we read it? Very fascinating. Different times. Chol HaMoed, Shabbos. If not Chol HaMoed, then we read it Achron Shel Chag. Shavuos, where there's no Chol HaMoed, we read it the first day of the Chag. Very, very fascinating question. Or I said Achron Shel Chag, I should have said Rishon Shel Chag, when there's no Chol HaMoed. Megillat Esther is unique. It's the only Megillah we read twice, right or wrong, at night and by day. That's what we do today, halacha l'maisa. Gentlemen, you open up Masechet Sofrim and you see that originally there was a total different minhag. And it all begins, Megillat Esther, we have to read it by night, we read it by day. We read it twice. Shir HaShirim, Korin Oto, B'Leil Yomim Tovim Shel Galiyot Achronim, Chetzya B'Laila Echad, V'Chetzya B'Laila HaSheni. Wow, what a different minhag. And by the way, you can understand it. Leil HaSeder, first of all, they read at night. Why did they read at night but not by day? And this, we're open to any theory. But if you travel around the world, you notice that there are many Jewish communities when the main davening is at night, not by day. Give me an example. South Africa, Australia, to a certain degree England. When do you get the biggest crowd? You get the biggest crowd at night, not by day. Nighttime, that's the drasha time. It's very fascinating. Australia, the learning, the drasha. I've been at shuls in Sydney where I remember you can start davening at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and you don't finish till 8 o'clock at night. So it could be that at night was a more important davening for them. Now, first day Pesach, you certainly can't read the Megillah first 2 days. Why not? You can't read Shira Shirim. You have to make a Seder. So the last 2 nights, they split it in half to read how big is Shira Shirim? 8 prakim, am I right or wrong? To read 8 prakim, it's too long. Divide it in half. They divided it in half. 4 prakim the 7th night of Pesach, 4 prakim the 8th night of Pesach. Rut, b'motzai yontav rishon shel atzeret ad chetzyo, u'mashlim b'motzai yontav acharon. Rut, very interesting minhag. First night of Shavuot, they were up all night learning. They had no time to read Rut. Motzai yontav rishon, they read half the book, and the Motzai yontav altogether, they read the other half. Wow, what a different minhag. The Yeshom Rimba Kulan Matrilim the Motzai Shabbat Shalifnechem. And others say you read it Motzai Shabbat, which of course is our minhag. Not Motzai Shabbat, but Shabbat Baboka. And we read all of Kohelet. When you read Kohelet, I know my minhag begins 15 minutes earlier. Kohelet is a tremendous reading. When do you read it? Shabbat, Chalamayid. But look what the Masechet Sofrim says. V'nohagu ha'am kach. She'ein halacha nikbat ad sheyehe min hag. That this is what the people did. And the halacha is decided by the people, by their actions, by their deeds. And here you have the famous words, V'zesha amru minhag mevatel halacha. Underline those words. These words have been quoted 1,000 times in every different form imaginable. Minhag mevatel halakha. Now, what does this mean? This can be dynamite. Minhag mevatel halakha. Have you read some of the tshuvot of the rabbinic, the Committee on Jewish Law of Rabbinic Assembly, of the rabbinic arm of the conservative movement? Time and again, you'll see this quoted. Minhag mevatel halakha. What does it mean? Minhag mevatel halakha. If we take this literally, well, you have today the feminist movement. What's wrong with a woman reading from the Torah? My son-in-law, my eldest son-in-law, is a president of the shul in Yerushalayim, not far from here. And he's a very good gabbai. So there's a private minyan this Shabbos. Some people they know, they're making a big simcha, a kid has a bar mitzvah, and they wanted my son-in-law to be the gabbai. And he said he can't do it. Why can't he do it? Because they're calling a woman up to the Torah. And if he would be the gabbai, he has to call a woman up to the Torah. No, what's wrong with calling a woman up to the Torah? And it's an open gemara at the end of Megillah. Kol olin l'minyan sheva, right or wrong, even women. All right, we don't do it, kavod hatzibur. But this is now 2,000 years, 1,500 years later, And Klal Yisrael, how will we know? Hey, we don't call up women. So you're going to come along and say, Minhag Mevatel Halacha. What does this mean, Minhag Mevatel Halacha? If you take it at face value, it has very far-reaching repercussions. You can go on and on with examples from modern life where they'll say to you, Minhag Mevatel Halacha. And tell me, Siddur Kedushin, what's wrong with a woman being Mesadik and Misaderet Kedushin? Where does it say it has to be a man? Who can say the Birchat Kedushin? It could be originally the Chatan had to say the Birchat Kedushin. Look into the Lashon of the Rambam. Could very well be, all right, the Chatan, today the Chatanim are nervous. You don't want them to make mistakes. It's a public ceremony. So today we have a Rav being Mesadik Kedushin. Okay, no, along come the feminist movement. What's wrong with the women? Minhag Mevatel Halacha. You claim it's an ancient tradition. It's like a halacha. This is a very powerful statement, and it's an amorphous statement. How do you define it? Now, what's very interesting afterwards is obviously after they wrote in Masechet Sofrim, She'amru Minhag Mevatel Halacha. So evidently they realize the implications, so they qualify it. Minhag Vatikin, avo minhag she'ein lo rayim in a Torah, eino ela toel b'shikul hadat. And that too, a very fascinating statement, that minhag mevatel halacha, it has to be a minhag vatikin. Minhag vatikin, literal translation, an ancient minhag. It probably, a more correct translation would be a minhag that has sources, that has been hallowed, that has been observed, that Am Yisrael throughout the millennium has enhanced this minhag with a certain degree of spirituality. I don't want to use the word Ruach HaKodesh, but a minhag, it has to be a minhag vatikin. You just can't come along and say, we have a new minhag as a result of the Western world, the 20th century, as a result of humanism, as a result of liberalism, as a result of anarchism, as a result of communism, as a result of socialism, a new minhag has come along. It has to be a minhag vatikin. But nevertheless, these are two powerful sources that say to us that a minhag is very important and has weight and authority in the halachic tradition, in the halachic picture, in the halachic frame of reference. These are two sources from Chazal. One is Yerushalmi, one is later, Masechet Sofrim. These sources deal with two entirely different areas. One deals with selling an animal to a guy with the problem of Shabbos, the problem of Schirut, the problem of Sheilah. One deals with when do we read the Megillot, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot. Fascinating how different their minhag was from the minhag that we observe today. By the way, I want to tell you in parentheses, again, I just throw this out because we're on a graduate school level here and some of you may go on to additional research. Just be aware that it's a fascinating topic how some of what we find in Masechet Sofrim we do not do today. We do not observe. It's very fascinating how changes have come about in the tefillah, in the prayer, in the laning, in the haftorah, if you're familiar with what I'm speaking about. And it's interesting to see how not everything in Masechet Sofrim is halacha lemaisa today. The minhag of Klal Yisrael knocked out what we can call popularly the hallowed halacha that came down to us throughout the ages. Okay, that's point number one. Now I want to come to the heart of today's shiur. And I want to open up a world that I take for granted you have dealt with before. And I want to show you how, with all that we know about Minhagim, we have never come up with a definitive description exactly what is a Minhag. And here, I refer you to my shurim last year, and I said something further this summer, said it in private discussion with rabbis, and some of them big Talmidei Chachamim, and it was very well received. And I want to share it with you, and again, you're free to disagree with me. I'm now going into the world of Hashkafa, and you all know I've said over the millennium, halacha, I have to defend every word I say, but in Hashkafa, we're entitled to have different opinions. I spent many, many months in the Monday class last year on Das Torah. Das Torah, I don't believe anyone in the world has ever given as many shurim as I gave and went into it as deeply as I did. You're welcome to listen to the shurim. They're all on yutorah.org. A lot of people are turned off by this so-called Das Torah. And I mean, I can give you a simple, if you want a very simple example, there was an asifa about the internet. So at this asifa, in the modern world, they hooked up with Bnei Brak and they brought in Rabbi Wuznes spoke. Rabbi Shmuel Wuznes was a posek, a Hasidic posek, or Gadish, a Hasidic posek. And he's not a youngster, he's a Yidat Talmud Chacham. And he asked taking into day schools, yeshiva, any kid who has a computer in his house. And this was said publicly in front of tens of thousands of people. Now you just think for a moment what that means. That means that you'd have to close down 95% of the yeshiva in America who doesn't have a computer in their house today. I mean, that's like, it meant that when I grew up, again, I referred to Washington, I can go, I don't want to do it publicly, but there was one kid in YU that I knew who became, and many of them became Ga'anim and Sadikim, who came from a Shomer Shabbos house. There was no such thing in the Bronx. Who was Shomer Shabbos? It was unheard of. Mothers were Shomer Shabbos. Fathers worked on Shabbos. You worked half a day. I knew people who came home from work Saturday afternoon, 1 o'clock, made Kiddush, ate and opened up a Gemara, and I would knock on their door and I would ask them to help me. I was a kid of, and I'm learning Gemara, I needed help. And that was the world then. Could you imagine if they asked taking any kid into a day school in America whose parents were not Shomer Shabbos? All right, so someone got to Rabbi Wuznes, and 2 days later he issued an apology and he didn't know the facts. It was so sad. Now, when you go with the concept of Das Torah, or as I told an audience, a very appreciative audience in West Hempstead, among them some of your very famous rabbis, Rabbanim, Talmidei Chachamim, YU leaders, I said, I quoted the Rav. The Rav once said, when the Rav ad-libbed in a Yotzeit Shiur, those were the greatest moments. When he took off his glasses and he stopped reading the manuscript, it was heaven. So he once said, I'm saying it in English, but I hear it in my years in Yiddish. He once said, when you're in a machloikis with a conservative, a chassid, he said, you can defeat the chassid on 2 points in 1 minute. First of all, ask him whether he eats in a sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, and if he tells you no, he only makes kiddush, he goes up to the house, Shom the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Mem Zayin Ad Aleph, Yetev Yatvinim, Baruch Lom Avarchinin, you have to sit in the Sukkah, it's an open Gemara, you don't make a bracha, he's out of the ballpark. And the other thing, ask him, what time do you daven Shachris and when do you say Kriyat Shema? And when he tells you he starts davening Shabbos morning, Chabad, 9:30, tell him he's out of it, you've defeated him. So I said, if you're ever having an argument with an Agudist, all you have to say to him is, you believe in Das Torah? Of course, Das Torah! So tell me, Eretz Yisrael, how come all the Gedolim said in 1919 that there can be no Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel before the advent of Mashiach? Who abolished that? Oh boy, they can't answer that. And if you look into Hachomah, of the Eda Haredit, they never let Agudat Yisrael forget their original Das Torah position. Now, as a result, and here it's my interpretation, I may be right or I may be wrong, I was shocked and frightened and overwhelmed by how much of a push I saw towards the left. And I viewed it that there's a response to Das Torah and in their enmity towards Das Torah, which may be justified, they have forgotten Emunat Chachamim. They have forgotten that we have a halachic system, that there's Emunat Chachamim, that there's a limit what we can innovate, there's a limit what we can change, there's a limit what we can give into to the passing fancies of the world of the New York Times, etc., of the year 2013. And this is very important. And Emunat Chachamim, and this I spent many weeks before I went to Das Torah explaining what Emunat Chachamim is. Without Emunat Chachamim, wouldn't be here. We don't have a Torah, we don't have a religion. As the Rav said, when you start cutting the branches of the tree on which we sit, you're going to destroy the whole tree. Now, what is Emunat Chachamim? What is the system? And here I want to come into the heart of today's Shia. No one defined it better than the Rambam. The Rambam, I'll give you three different places, three different sources, where the Rambam touches upon what is Emunat Chachamim, what is the halakhic system, what obligates us, what is Torah Shebaal Peh. Three different places, and the Rambam, there's no contradiction here. It's very solid, very basic, and I can't be do any better than Hilchot Mamrim. Look up Perek Aleph, Hilchot Mamrim, and you all know. Again, I'll say it very briefly. Hilchot Mamrim deals with the Zakin Mamri. In order to know who is a Zakin Mamri, you have to know what he is rebelling against, what he is paskining against. And therefore, the Rambam explains what Torah Shebaal Peh, what Horah is all about. What's very important in the Rambam, and again I hear my Rebbe saying it in Yiddish, quoting the Rambam, Perek Aleph, Halach Aleph, based on HaGadol Shebirushalayim, Heim Ita Torah Shebaal Peh, V'heim Amudei HaHorah. And the Rambam and the Soft Halacha V'chol HaMamin B'Moshe Rabbeinu B'Torato Chayav L'Smoch Ma'aseh Hadat Aleihem U'Lehisha'ein Aleihem. And when it comes to Torah Shebaal Peh, this is the Beit Din HaGadol. Everything we do, we have to believe in them, we have to accept them, we have to take these traditions. We cannot change. This is the basis of our existence. And I showed you the Sefer HaChinuch last year. This is the Chinuch that this... And I spoke with the Rabbi, and I'll come back to this much later this year when I deal with Halacha L'Maisa. This is Torah Shebaal Peh. This is the ongoing process of how we decide Halacha. It is a self-contained system, and this is what Shas and Paiskim are all about. Now, what's magnificent about the Rambam is he defines what is Torah Shebaal Peh, what is included in it. And I'll summarize the Rambam very quickly, and I just, again, I take for granted, know this. The Rambam, of course, says there are two basic areas of Torah Shebaal Peh. One is the Oraita, one is the Rabbanan. What is the Oraita? Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, Perish Mekubal, Din Mechudash. Examples, Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, Tefillin have to be black. I am a big religious Zionist. I'm going to walk into my shul tomorrow morning with Tefillin that are blue and white. You know something? With the bottom, it's not such a problem, Yaakov. The problem is with the Ritzua. Have to be black. Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. I'm not certain the bottom are on the same level as the... That may be already less of an obligation to be black. But be it as it may, you understand what I'm saying? That's Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. What is a Perish Mekubal? I'm going to walk into Tigris on Chol HaMoed with an orange instead of an etrog. I'm going to say, Pri Eitz Hadar, I love an orange, not an etrog. No, I'm an idiot. The Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Lamed He, brings so many pirushim to explain why it is an etrog. Right? You with me? But it's a Kabbalah. Perush Mekubal. God told Moshe Rabbeinu, take an etrog. Moshe Rabbeinu asked him, what do you mean, Pri Eitz Hadar? You follow me? But you can give a perush. Unlike tefillin, where you can't give a perush. What is a din mechudash? No, when you got married, Ephraim, what did you give Fagi? You gave her a ring. What the heck does a ring have to do with Kedushin? Kicha, kicha, mistay, Ephraim, we learn out. He made kesef asada, kach mimeni. That's the way they bought stay Ephraim. This is the way we acquire a wife. Shava kesef ki kesef. So you gave a ring. Do you follow me? That's a din mechudash. All these laws are d'oraita. Ah, what's the Rabbanan? So there are three. I'll show you, give you the source in a second. There are three different categories that are the Rabbanan. Gezeira, Takana, and Minhagim or Minhagot. It's interesting that the Rishonim used the word Minhagot, but in modern Hebrew we use the word Minhagim. No, a Gezeira Takana, how do you define it? There are 1,000 different definitions. The basic definition, I've given it many times, it's very simple. A Gezeira is Frumkeit. A Takana has nothing to do with Frumkeit. It's the well-being of the Jewish people. Example, Gezeira, Muktzah. What is Muktzah? You shouldn't move a pen around on Shabbos, or you'll start writing with it. Frumkeit. Basa v'chalav, of b'chalav. Why can't you have of b'chalav? Why can't I have chicken fried in sour cream? Because if you have chicken fried in sour cream, you'll cook meat in sour cream. Again, frumkeit. All of dinei taret mishpacha that we're machmir with shivanikim is that we shouldn't fall into a problem of zava gedola. Again, it's frumkeit, and that's the best definition for gezeira is a mishmeret lemishmarti. I'm quoting the Gemara in Yevamot. I know you don't like the word frumkeit, but I don't have a better word for Yitzchak. What's your word for it? Let me hear.
Gezeira of the restrictions that you cannot do with the colors of the enactments that you should do. And you gave it a nice Jewish. It's a nice idea.
No. What you just said now is not entirely true. Because then, okay, let me, I like the word frumkeit, because that really covers.
It preserves, it makes sure that I say it's the other
color. Right,
so, make sure that we don't violate.
Okay, so what you're saying in three sentences, I say with one syllable, frumkeit. I hold it. Again, I don't want to be autocratic, and you know that I've grown up with the Rav. There's a lot of room for discussion, but I don't have a better description than frumkeit. Now, a takana, you see, again, I always give the example, and I once pulled this off in a Machon Gold Girl class. I met the woman this past year again, 30, 40 years after I chopped her head off. I once said to the class, and these were older girls than you came to Israel when you were a junior or after college. So I said to the class, imagine you're going out with a boy, and for those of you who aren't married yet, and the boy says to you, Sarah, I love you, but I want you to know the Jewish people suffer from lack of Jews. I'd like to marry you, but on condition I can marry three other women in addition, and therefore instead of only having 8 children, I can have 32 children. And I asked which girl would agree, and this girl, Taka, raised her hand, she would agree to it. Lo aleinu, she's not from today. Now you understand why. Her whole family is from, but she had problems afterwards. She had very serious illness, and it's a whole story. It's now many, many years later, she's practically my age today. She almost caught up with me. Anyway, no? Tell me, for the good of the Jewish people, Ephraim, you should have 4 wives. You just became a father, big deal. At your age, you should have 20 children. Think what I'm saying. Good of the Jewish people. Wow. Gentlemen, we can't live that way today. One man, one woman. Marriage is different than it was in biblical times. Look into Rakefet's work on the Rav, where he quotes the Rav in relation to Chet Meir Rabbanim. Look into that carefully and check out my footnote. You'll see. Nope. This is against Frumkeit. Frumkeit, four women, 50 children. Doesn't work that way. One wife. Takana of Rabbeinu Geshem. Letters. No, this is a question for Chinuch. Reb Nosson Kamenetsky got thrown into Cherem over this. No, what am I about to say? The Alter of Slabodka opened up the letters that Rabbi Chia Yaakov Weinberg was getting, that Rabbi Aaron Cutler was getting. Rabbi Aaron Cutler's letters from his sister, from Malka, his older sister. Found out what was going on, wouldn't show them the letters. If Rabbi Aaron had seen the letters, he would have wound up in Moscow University. Rakefet wouldn't have given a talk in Lawrence a few weeks ago, 50th Yahrzeit this year, Rabbi Aaron Cutler. The first person to give a talk on Rabbi Aaron Cutler. This fingers are up of the man who did it. I'm waiting for a Lakewood Rosh Yeshiva to give a talk on the Rambam, Yisrat Hashem. Nathaniel, thank you. You understand my sense of humor. Okay. Are you allowed to open someone's letter? No. Takana of Rabbeinu Geshem. You never saw a letter sealed. They write on the back where you would open it, pay, gimel, etc. It's for business reasons. How can you do business? So, look, for Frumkeit, Rebbe should open up every letter a kid gets. No, it's not healthy, it's not good. This is the world in which we live today. And a person has to be respected, and mail is a personal issue, and we have no right to open up his letters. Again, it's against Frumkeit, but it's for the, I would say, the decency and ethical, moral fitness of Torah society. And Rav Nosson wrote about the Alter of Slabodka opening, and Reb Aaron, and what went on, and the Lakewood crowd came out and put him in the Cherem. All right. It's a problem. It's a problem. Not for me, because I don't live in that world, but Reb Nosson lives in that world. So when you write like that, it can be a problem. But it's interesting. This is a gezeira. I'll give you a third example of a gezeira that comes up in Israel every so often. But it goes, I'll give you the sur. A takana, excuse me, thank you. Give you another example of a takana that comes up very often. It repeats itself. But this goes back to the original Tzemach Tzedek. No, we have a minute Yisrael, our pi Kabbalah, to eat fish on Shabbos. Why? Today we eat fish because we know fish is healthy. No one knew fish was healthy then. I grew up in a world where meat is healthy. Today we know red meat, the more you eat, it takes years off your life. Okay. Why do we have a minute to eat fish? Because the fish did not sin. That's why the mabul did not wipe them out. You look into Bereshit Rabbah. Fish didn't sin. They didn't change mates. Ah, this is Kedusha, Shabbos, fish. The Ayin Hara is not shaletet on fish. We want to be like fish. We eat fish. No, the guy knew that the Jews ate fish. Thursday they raised the price. So you already have tshuva, the guy raised the price. Chas v'chalila, you should buy fish. No, that's a takana for the economic good of the Jewish people. You follow what I'm saying? Nothing to do with Frumkeit. Frumkeit, who hears from a Hasidic background? Not to eat fish on Shabbos? Ay vey. How can that be? Where does that come up in Israel? So I'll tell you, during the Shemitah years, so a good deal of the population buys from the Arabs. The Arabs know that the Jews need green peppers to make salads. They raise the price. You'll see in Mei Sharim, Pasquailas go up. It is forbidden to buy peppers and cucumbers until the Beitin will permit it when the prices go down. So you see, that's a takana. Our problem is, what is a minhag? What is a minhag? And here, I quote to you from the Rambam, Hilchot Mamrim, Perek Aleph, Halacha Bet, and the Rambam goes through what is Torah Shabbat Peh, and he talks about Mipi HaShmua, and Hamidat Shetorah Nedreshet Bankem, everything I told you, and he talks about Lasot Siyak LaTorah, what Rabbi Reuben mentioned, Ulefim Ashad Saricha, Vehein Gezerot V'Takonot V'Haminhagot. And what a minhagim. You look in, I'm holding in front of me the Rambam La'am, which is a very fine, nice edition of the Rambam with a fascinating commentary underneath. And he gives examples of minhagim, but he can't define it. What are the examples? For instance, not to do malacha on Erev Pesach, Ad Chatzot. In other words, if you know about Erev Pesach, you are not allowed to do malacha. It becomes like Chol HaMoed after half a day. Do you know why? Because of Korban Pesach. From the time you could bring the Korban Pesach, there's already a certain Kedusha Tayom. It may have the same, again, I'm being very popular on a very fascinating topic, but it may have the same Kedusha as Chol HaMoed, so you can only do malacha davar of it. Okay? So some people already had a minhag not to do malacha all of Erev Pesach. Okay, it's the Sugyim Psachim Dafnun. So again, what does that minhag mean? All right, you can give it many interpretations. I would simply interpret it that you're so busy Erev Pesach getting ready for the Seder and the Bir Chametz and getting ready, better not to do malacha. Chibet Arava Bahoshana Rabbi, the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Mem Dalet Amar Aleph, Nu. I challenge anyone to explain that. Takana, Gezeira, no, people come into shul. I was in the rabbinate. Remember, I'm the only Rebbe here in Gris that was actually the active rabbinate for 61 to 69, till I went in Aliyah. No, people walk into shul, you're trying to be makarev people, and they see you in shul, you're lifting up leaves and beating them, everyone beating as hard as he can be. No, minhag. Explain it. No, what are you saying? Danny, could you explain it? I can explain it. You have to be able to explain it. But you got to admit, there's a big difference between a minhag not to do malacha Erev Pesach and a minhag of chibut aravat, which is a minhag neviim. I'll explain it to you. It's to me very simple. We get a little tense. If you're a good Jew, you get a little tense already. L'davad Hashem Ori, you hear the shofar. If you follow Minhag Agro, you don't say the davad Hashem Ori, you're lucky, so you don't get too tense. But the shofar scares you enough. Then I don't have to tell you, Rosh Hashanah comes, Yom HaDin, the Tefillah from Rosh Hashanah, the Zichronah, the Malkiyot, the Zichronah, the Shofrat, oh my gosh, all of Jewish history. Many times I've told rabbis, teach the Rosh Hashanah Musaf as a course unto itself. The history and theology of the Jewish people. It's right there in those 30 psukim. And then Aseret Yemei Tshuva. Oh my gosh. Yom Kippur. And then Asukah. Lulav and Etrog. I don't have to tell you what goes on with looking and checking and magnifying glasses. Ah, you finally made it to Hoshana Rabbah. You let off steam. I did it. I made it. All the Yetzer Hara and all the Sitra Acher, I'm beating them down. That's the way you have to explain it. Am I telling the truth? I don't know, Yaakov. But does it sound all right? It's Darshanut. And where I come from, Bashanut is still permitted. You see, in the Machlokes Rav Shach and the Rav, I go with the Rav, not with Rav Shach. Anyway, be it as it may, he has more examples there. I don't want to spend more time. But one thing you can see, the minhag is amorphous. It's not that he can come along the Rambam and tell you black and white what it is. But what he does tell you, kol echad ve'echad me'ino shel shadvarim, mitzvat asay lishmo alachem, ve'over alachad me'hem over belot asay, harei omer pietone sheyerucha, elo atakanot hagzeirot haminagot sheyeru behem lelabim, kidei lechazek hadat uletakein olam. And no one ever said it more beautifully than the Rambam and Hilchot Mamrim. It is overwhelming. And it's the, I don't know of any other text that is so basic in explaining what Torah Shabbat Peh is about, what Amunat Chachamim is about. And this is the heart of our religion, the heart of our Torah, the heart of the context in which we have to live as Torah Jews. And this is the Rambam, this is life, this is tradition, this is what has sustained us until now, and this is what we have to take further. And my fear, and it hurts me to say this, because it's some of Talmidim of mine, that in their anguish with Das Torah and some of the foolishness that you hear out there in the name of Torah, they don't realize they have to differentiate between the so-called concept of Das Torah, which didn't exist before World War II, quote the Rav and many others, and the Emunat Chachamim, which is the heart of our existence as Jews. When you turn around and call the Mechitza, poke fun at the Mechitza, and maledict the rabbis for what they're doing to women, and Orthodox rabbis sign on, and rabbis who learned in this kollel, one in the 80s, one in the 90s. Nice fellas when they were my students. Ribbono Shalom. We have chucked the Emunat Chachamim out of the window. I hope you remember my words, because now you're nice young men, but boy, what I have seen.
It isn't only what the Rabbonim say, it's also what they don't say. The lack of courage to give a woman a get. We can figure out ways to make whiskey a while after the other. We haven't figured out a way to get a maneuver.
I figured out a way to get a maneuver to get it. You get the Satmagun squad and Vigamanu. But no, not the Satmagun squad. There is an unwritten agreement that they will never arrest anyone, and you check it out. What about here? No, don't say that. In Israel, Rabbanim throw people into jail. There are very few are going out here. Baruch Hashem, it's a lot better here, but you need Dayanim. Not for now. Let me put it to you very simply. I quoted a modern Hebrew aphorism. Ota geveret bishinui aderet. Have you ever heard that? It's from one of the modern authors. This is the trick of Yiddishkeit. The core never changes, but we have to know how to present it in proper dress for the generation in which we find ourselves. Remember what the Rebbe used to say? They view Yiddishkeit as an old lady, an ugly old lady with a weazened face. We have to take that old lady and dress her up so they will look at her with admiration. I'm practically quoting the Rebbe word by word. That's the challenge. So you have Rabbanim. I have a lot to say. Let me say it, let me work it in with RJJ. You'll see what I have to say. But this is the challenge. And to go and pander to the masses that the rabbis are cruel. How can you say the rabbis are cruel? Rabbi Yitzchok Spector slept at night when there was an aguna? How many hundreds of thousands of pages were written la'atir aguna? But you have to work within the halachic system. We can't just throw out. If Rabbi Rachman was correct, then how come we have Mamzeret in the world? We just go and be retroactively annul every marriage. There'll never be a Mamza. You can throw out all of that. To quote Rebbe, you can throw out all of Masechet Yevamot. You can throw out the fourth parak in Kedusha. This is serious. Torah's Mechayev. You can't just play games with it. Okay. But be it as it may, it's the problem is real, and I think it's to a certain degree, it's the anguish of Das Torah, which at times, I mean, becomes it's overwhelming, and so they want to take it all away, and they don't realize that there is a Munat Chachamim. You have to know what a Munat Chachamim means, etc. I used the tshuva. Remember, I brought the tshuva in class of the Bnei Banim of demonstrating Rabbi Yehuda Herzl Henkin demonstrating for Russian Jewry. I used that very powerfully. Audiences really responded to that, and I said that's the difference between Das Torah and halakhic common sense. And you can't just say because 50 years ago they said shtatlanut, you can do shtatlanut today. If the walls of the Kremlin are caving in. And the opinion of the experts is that the demonstrations are helping, then of course you have to shift gears. And that's his tshuva. He quotes the Rebbe, quotes Reb Moshe. It's a very powerful tshuva. But it catches the difference between Das Torah and an authentic Torah approach to these ongoing problems. Okay, now I want to show you the Rambam, not only in Hilchot Mamrim, but the Rambam also, the Hakdama to Mishnayot. The Hakdama, remember the Rambam, when his earliest work was his classic work on the Mishnah. What's interesting is that was originally written in Arabic, and you can see it was written to be a more popular work. It was later translated into Hebrew. It's unlike the Mishnah Torah, which he wrote in Hebrew to begin with, because he felt that would be his everlasting contribution. And when you look into the Hakdama to the Mishnah, I'm also quoting from the Rambam La'am edition. I'm quoting, again, it's page 41 in the Rambam Ha'am edition. And in Chelek HaMishi, where he's discussing what consists of Torah Shebal Peh, and he's going into all the little differences, the gezerat, the takanat, and in Chelek HaMishi, heim hadinim asuyim al derech hachakira bahaskama, bedvarim hanohagim bein bnei adam, she'ein bat tosefet b'mitzvah v'lo gira'on, o bedvarim she'ein tu'elet levnei adam bedivrei Torah, v'karu altam, takanot u minhagim. And you see, here too, it's a very amorphous definition. It's, first of all, very important, you need haskama. You can't force something on the Jewish people. The healthy instincts of the Jewish people have to accept what the sages, the rabbis, or the masses are trying to do. Number two, look at the words he uses. Shein bat tosefet b'mitzvah v'lo gira'on. It's not adding to the mitzvah, it's not taking away from the mitzvah. Notice he's talking about takonot and minhagim. He's not talking about gezerat. And shechein toelet levnei adam b'divrei Torah. It helps the person. It helps the person lead a life of Torah. And you can go, the takanot are very easy to understand. They can be economically important, they can be socially important, they can be physically important. The minhagim, no, beating the aravat. What does that have to do with leading shetein tolet ne'adam b'divrei Torah? Minhag. I'll take another minhag that's come under tremendous attack. The kala walks around the chatan 7 times. No? I can tell you one of the great Wayu Rosh Yeshiva's daughter refused to walk around the Chatan. They asked him, my high. He answered, feminism. No? Medik Yisrael. No? How do you explain it, Danny? You want to know how Rakefet explains it? Very simple. This is the most important part of the marriage ceremony. Because the male species, as a result of education, which I am partially guilty for this result, becomes very self-centered. Gadlut Adam. How many of you have learned in Slabatka? How many of you were inspired, exposed to the Sikhat of Reb Natan Zvi Finkel, for whom the recent Mira Rosh Yeshiva was named his great-grandfather? Gadlut Adam, the apex of God's creation. Know who you are. Know your responsibilities. Know your greatness. Oh my, in Slabatka they wore the latest styles, suits, ties. And he's going to get married. Self-centered. Not concerned of anything about his wife. Another person in his life. More important, looking to the Rambam. Hilchot Isha, Perekat Vav, Halacha Chitet Chav. Oh boy. She must walk around him 7 times to remind him. Young man, wake up. You have a partner. You have a wife. You have a soulmate. She has to become your main concern. Don't think only of yourself. Heval Havalim, 7 times Kohelet said it. When you think only of yourself, this is a sea change in life. Only after she walks around 7 times can they stand together and the Birchat Erusin be pronounced, ready to join them as one. How have I done, Danny? Have I convinced you? No. You're still suffering. Okay.
You're teaching Rabbi Wolberg's class.
Homiletics, boy, oh boy.
That's good stuff.
Believe me, there's no better way. What are you going to do? You're facing a challenge you have to, and this is Minig Yisrael. God forbid we should change Menhagim. Minig Yisrael. Seder. Danny, think about it. Don't respond on the spot. Okay? But what's amazing is that even here, in his Hakdama to Mishnah Torah, he does not give us a clear definition of Menhagim. Takanot? Absolutely. Minhagim, still not clear. Let me go one step further. Maybe the last thing I can touch tonight, tonight. The days are getting smaller. The clock is moving. The winter is almost upon us. It's life. God should give us strength. Gentlemen, nothing compares to the Hakdama to Rambam to Mishnah Torah. It's the basic text that traces the history of Torah Shebaal Peh. And I'm quoting now from the Hakdama, I'm quoting from the Frankel edition, Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. Again, there are so many different editions, but it's not hard to find. It's not that many pages. Nimtza Rabbeinu Rav Moshe V'Chaim Sof Gedolei Chachmei Yisrael Hama'atikim Torah Shebaal Peh. That Rabbeinu Rav Moshe, the end of the Talmud, this is the end of the Gedolei Yisrael who copied over, gave us the Talmud. Talmud, you understand, it's Torah Shebaal Peh. Even the New York Times was impressed with part of the Siyum Shas. They found fault, and then what they found fault with, I have to say, if Agudat Yisrael had asked me to go and spend $100,000 to build a curtain on it. In a house of Avelut, when you daven, do you put up a mechitza? Minhag Yisrael, Minhag Yisrael, underline the word minhag. The men go into a corner. You only put up a mechitza in a permanent place where you're davening. If you're on a hike, I don't know, if you're on a tour around the world and you're in Tokyo and it's time to daven mincha, so 15 men go into a corner and daven. You don't have to put a mechitza up. So they went and they spent, I had told, $100,000 on a curtain, and the women were in a separate section. Not only that, what are we talking about? Is every man a walking sex predator? I don't know. I must be in a different world. I think I'm a normal guy. I grew up in MTA. I think I'm a normal guy. It frightens me. What are we, sick? Or we walk around, I don't want to use God. So that they criticized. They sent a female reporter. I got to give the New York Times credit. They know how to get under the carpet. They know that a female reporter. Everyone else sent a male reporter. They sent a female reporter. Okay. What did they do? They gave us the Torah Shebal Peh. Gazru gezeirot titinu takanot vehinhigu min hagot. And every takana, every gezeira, every minhag that they introduced obligates every Jew, no matter where he is. Now, fascinating. Again, he doesn't define. But one paragraph later, he touches upon the most definitive problem in Psak Halakha. The world changed. The Jews went into exile. So many different communities. So many different Gezeirat. Perhaps Gezeirat ended already. We'll talk about that. It's a fascinating topic. Not now, not yet. Takanot certainly didn't end. So many different menhagim. What obligates who? What do we have to follow? You ever walk into a Yemenite shul? No one gets up to daven. It's literally the Rambam. Look into Hilchat Tefillah. Til Yishtabach. No one stands up. Right or wrong. They daven that way. We daven a different way. All summer. Hodu. Before Baruch Sha'am. Their pronunciation. Birich ata. Shekidishani. My grandfather used to come home from shul hysterical when a Galiziana davened for a moment. Thought you wouldn't yotzei. Today I know how to learn. I would show him the Mishnah Brura. I know a little bit how to learn. Never say you know how to learn. I heard that from the Rav. You have to say a Talmud Chacham. You're always a Talmud who wants to be a Chacham. If you think you're a Chacham, that's bad. Okay. Pardon me for saying something bad. I know a little bit how to learn. I would show him the Mishnah Brua. I'd show him the Heichal Yitzchak, the Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzak, Chubat Aleph Bet, Norah Chaim, etc. Who do you follow? What do you do? Yatzmach Pukanei V'karev Meshichei. That's minor already. What about the Eidot HaMizrach? Shlomo Rabbim and Shemayim, Geula, Yeshua, Sheziva, all Rebbeinu Shalolim. Every good thing in the book is said in that Kaddish. So, the Rambam raises the issue. And these are the most important words the Rambam ever wrote. that in relation to a maskana of the Gemara, it obligates every Jew, no matter where he is. What are the words of the Rambam? Shehiskimu aleihem kol Yisrael. We've agreed, there's haskama. We do not argue with the maskana of the Gemara. Whatever the Gemara decided obligates every Jew. From the end of the Gemara period, every community is free to follow its own minhagim, its own takanot. We can't obligate one the other. And of course, this is why throughout the millennium, the Sfadim and the Ashkenazim had such different lifestyles, because each one developed along a different track. I don't have to go any further than Chalitza and Yibam. Anyone from the Ashkenazic world, we only did Chalitza. Anyone from the Sfadic world had a choice of Yibam or Chalitza. Baruch Atah Melech Olam Shekol Yibad Viro. This is one of the greatest problems of the state of Israel. We all live together here. We're trying to become one people. How do we work out a halachic system with minhanim and takanot that all Torah Jews should feel comfortable with? You know how much has been written, how many takanot? Chlitza, Yibam, state of Israel. Had the mayor Rabbanim, had the chief rabbis, more than one wife. These are issues that go on right now. Age of marriage, they just changed it. So you see, this is the Rambam. Maskanat HaGemara obligates every Jew. Ba'asher hu sham. Beyond the Gemara, look into the words of the Rambam. Lefikach en kofen anshei medina zul in hog. We all are self-sufficient authorities. What do we do in Eretz Yisrael? So, gentlemen, first of all, I want to thank you very much for coming. Secondly, I want to say hello to all those listening around the world. Thirdly, I want to tell you that tomorrow morning I'm beginning a series of lectures that I think will last a few years on the history of Torah in the United States. So it's going to be a very different, a very special framework that we deal with tomorrow. What did we do tonight? Just to reiterate, we are scratching the topic of minhag. Again, in the context of paskening halacha, I cannot say it's a major, major issue. But it's a fascinating issue to try to define how much input minhag has and what Chazal meant when they say minhag koveya halacha or minhag mevatel halacha, and can we reach an operative conclusion. What we did today, we referred to the Yerushalmi and Psachim, Behem Agasa, Behem Adaka, but the words of the Gemara, that Minhag Mevatel Halacha. We referred to the Mesechet Sofrim with Kriyat HaMegillah, and Ein Halacha Nikbad Ad Sheyehe Minhag. We try to find the definition of Minhag, and I gave you three different sources in the Rambam, in first of all, Hilchot Mamrim, which is the most basic, because there he writes very clearly, and it was written in Hebrew, and it was written halacha l'dorot, if you know the Hakdama of the Rambam to the Mishnah Torah, and then we dealt with the Hakdama to Mishnayot, and then we dealt with the Rambam's Hakdama to Mishnah Torah. In all three instances, we can define what's the oraita, we can define halach mishneh, that's on a perish bakubal, we can define a din mechudesh, we can define a gezeri, we can define a takana, a minhag remains amorphous. And Be'ezrat Hashem, I'll pick up exactly where I left off with the steichemid, Be'ezrat Hanotein le'ya'af koach. Now, I have a minhag of my own that I give away. A lot of material comes my way, and a lot of it I am happy to give away because there's a limit what one can hold on to. This is for Yitzchak. That's for you. Anyone want? This is Nishma from Rabbi Hecht in Toronto. He's very good and raises issues in Parshat HaShavua with very good sources. This is about the Rav trying to establish what works do we have on the Rav, analyzing his general thrust, and it gives you some interesting sources here. This is a Sefer, her internet Bahalacha. If anyone is interested, please come take it, pass it back. Come. Internet, there's with Shilas and Halacha. This is a Sefer on Shmini Atzeret, also dealing with Divrei Halacha on Shmini Atzeret. It's Halacha Lamaisik, Shmini Atzeret is around the corner. And this is very famous in Israel. This is Tzohar, which is trying to fight the Haredi. It's like America, but a little bit different. This is the Tzohar statement of what the Rabbanit, what the Rabbanit has to do in Israel. This was just published, the Gimel Elul, two weeks ago. It's a very fascinating document. Until we meet again in health and happiness tomorrow morning, Das Vedanya. See if there's there's a name there, right? And I think there's also some Haskama there.
No, I have to have some.
Is there any Haskama?